True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Oh my gosh, it feels great to actually have some sleep. Insane over the last 2 days in a row, between the travel schedule, just insane. But anyway, got a good night's sleep last night, feeling great and excited to be here. It is time to talk about Nancy Guthrie. Nancy Guthrie went missing reportedly again on February 1st of this year. She's the 80, she is, I'm sorry, the mother of Savannah Guthrie, a talk show host on the Today Show. And she went missing again on the 1st from her home in Tucson. Now, remember, she'd been in this home for about 50 years. I also want to always, and I almost always touch on this, the fact that the sheriff mentioned very early on in one of his very first pressers, in fact, it might have been the first presser, that his sheriff's, his deputies actually reported to her house on Saturday at night. Those are his exact words. Saturday at night, my deputies were there. No one else was there in terms of our other law enforcement partners. I just can never let that leave my mind until that is rectified. You know, I just don't understand the specificity of saying the word Saturday and saying the word that night, when in fact, according to all the reports that we know later, it was said that when she didn't end up going with her church group, she always celebrated church with friends at a local place. That when that happened and she didn't show up, that was the first indication. So I think that will always bother me until we get someone to rectify that one way or the other, whether it was just an absolute misspeak, which happens all the time and can happen, very forgivable, or whether it is really, there was some sort of call and somebody went out there early on and just nothing was done. So anyway, I always like to preface the time Nancy went missing with that until somebody rectifies that. Today, I was going to get into a lot of issues regarding, not issues, but a lot of information regarding Nancy Guthrie, and also if that information could provide clues as a motivation as to why Nancy Guthrie was abducted. But I, quite frankly, with all the traveling and with my work issues, or not issues, but just my workload, I have not been able to get the full totality of everything that I wanted together. Can you all hear my puppy? He's crying because he needs to go outside. One moment.
Come on, baby.
Can't ignore Simba. So we're going to go over a couple of other things. I wanted to talk back again. I know I talked about this a little yesterday, but because I was reporting from the airport, it was difficult. First of all, I found this nice quiet spot, and then they decided to blare the music about at the exact time I decided to go on. So anyway, excuse me. Anyway, I wanted to talk again about this blood spatter that we see here. This is the best picture I can find. It's really important to note because I could tell by a lot of the communication I had back, particularly on Twitter X, that people think this was the day of. This was not the day of at all. This was Brian Inton going up on that porch with his camera person and them taking a picture. This is days later. And a lot of people have commented, you see that little green leaf that's on one of the blood, you know, that, oh, see, the blood was already there and then the shrubbery came. I don't believe that at all. I 100% believe that the blood was there, that the shrubbery was there. In other words, when he went up to that porch and used the shrubs that he reached back to take, see if I have that exact picture. I don't have that exact picture. Sorry, Let me remove Nancy for the moment. I don't have the exact picture, but right about this time, and I love this picture because you could so clearly see the face. And again, I will always believe that people who know and care about this person absolutely know who this was. If this were my husband, my brother, my father in this attire and everything we could see, I would absolutely know who he is. So in any event, he puts up shrubbery in front of the ring camera. And I believe that, of course, for that reason, the shrubbery was there well in advance of her being taken away. Now, I've always said the amount that he pulled does not match up with the amount that we see here. This is far less. And I truly believe, again, that that little piece and speck you see on that blood was just blown in there over those days in advance of Brian Inton and the camera crew taking this photo. I believe this was clearly when she was removed from the house and those blood droplets fell. I've also said numerous times that I believe that the reason you see this blood spattering in this particular space is because as he turned around to shut that door, I believe that the blood dripped multiple times and caused this spattering effect. But again, I did not work at the Quantico lab analyzing blood spatter. I'm only speaking from my experience in seeing blood spatter as an investigator, not as the criminologist that would actually be evaluating this spatter. But I do have somebody that I'm going to be having on to talk about this because Mac, and there was also a doctor that pointed out, Jen, this is, they believe, from her coughing and from the actual blood, I guess, coming out of her mouth, which really would imply a couple of things, of course. One, which is a good thing that she was alive at this time. And secondarily, it would imply, sadly, that she had internal trauma, internal bleeding. And that's why when she coughed or sneezed or whatever, it came out. I'm just not convinced that's this. I know that I'm going against what some other people have said. That's just not quite what I'm seeing, but I get why they're saying that. I get why they're saying that. So I'm going to have a reconstructionist on to talk about this. I'm just lining it up, but he's going to come on. He's just got a huge, busy schedule. Another sort of hypothesis from a lot of people is that she was fireman carried out. So in other words, she was taken, thrown out over the shoulder, and then that's why you see this blood dripping. I have been of the opinion, and again, all my viewpoints are from the vantage of working cases and debriefing individuals who do horrible crimes like this and what they did, what I've seen, combined with, of course, training and what I've studied. So adding all that together, and I'm not 100% convinced of that. I just believe that this blood falls much closer to the ground from what I can see. And it's possible that if she was fireman carried and she was bleeding from the arms, which we've all seen the pictures of Nancy on the Today Show, where her arms and hands are absolutely beat up, you know, just paper thin looking skin, and the blood that you, the bruising you can see, which is from blood thinners. When you see that, it's clearly somebody typically who is on blood thinners. So is it possible her hands, if she was fireman carried, would have been dangling over the shoulder and dropped? I just don't believe that. When you fireman carry somebody, for those of you who have, and I've had to do it, that is not what happens. And they're very far off the ground, typically pretty far off the ground. You know, I would say 3 or more feet off the ground, depending. So anyway, I've always believed she was carried more like this, like you carry somebody, if you can see me doing this motion, like this, you know, but down low, she was carried out. I've always thought also that she was likely hooded. And I thought that because I just believed that that's what they might have had in that bag to, you know, zip ties and other items to constrain her, combined with anything they might have used to cause the cameras, you know, to remove them or cause anything, any wire cutting type tools, any tools they thought they might have needed. And then I also believe they would want something to shroud her or to put over her for a couple of reasons. In the dark, it would be difficult because now I think we're seeing these people are much more sophisticated than we gave them credit for. It would be difficult just in a court of law. You would want to be able to say, well, you know, you can't say for sure what's underneath there. I'm just playing an Alan Jackson type attorney aspect. It would be obvious what was taken, but you know, somebody could try to argue something else if they're covered. And then secondarily, it would make them not able to see a vehicle you were going toward. I believe she was put in the trunk. There's no way she was put in the compartment of that vehicle. In other words, the back seat or the passenger seat. No way this person is going to risk being caught by being pulled over or somebody looking in that window. Even if they were dark, there's no way they're going to risk that. You know, this is late at night, and oftentimes vehicles that are out this late at night are pulled over by police. So I just think she was put in the trunk. I think she was constrained. I believe her mouth would have been taped if she was alive. We don't know that she wasn't alive. The fact that, and maybe we're going to see this, we have not seen, and I pointed this out. It was so funny. I pointed this out and that I think it was Fox that picked it up. But where's the cleaning crew? You know, typically if you're getting ready to return back and the crime scene's been, it's been decided that there's nothing else that can be gleaned from it, a crime scene crew of, in other words, not from law enforcement, but rather that the family pays for. You'll remember this in the Ellen Greenberg case. That was a big case where that crew came in literally the day after because the apartment staff wanted it in and wiped clean all the evidence, sadly, which has made that case near impossible. I don't think it will ever, no one will be charged, even though I think a lot of people believe who might have been responsible. But nevertheless, it was wiped clean. A lot of people don't know that. The next day, because the apartment staff, there was all that blood and all that horrible, gruesome sight, and they wanted it clean, so they hired a hazmat crew or a, I say hazardous material because blood is considered hazardous material, but they hired a crew, a bio-cleaning crew, biohazard type crew to come in. And they exist, they're in every city, and they come in and they clean it at the, typically in this case, it was at the landlord's expense, but in this case, it would be at the Guthrie expense to go do that. I haven't seen that yet. And I think it'll be very interesting to see if we see that, because that would indicate, of course, huge signs of possible bio materials, such as blood that would need to be cleaned up before the family could take back possession of the house. So I'm very interested to see, you know, if and when that happens. But the question is, you would never take an individual and not tape their mouth if they were alive. And if they did tape her mouth, then she wouldn't be able to cough all of this up, you see. And that's kind of the point I want to make, is that back to my point, that could this be drops? And then we see drop after drop after drop as they sit still, and then the spatter after. If this is my victim, I shroud them, I cover their mouth, again, assuming they're alive, and I carry them out. And again, if just say this is just porch guy, which again, I'm not convinced that, but say porch guy does all this, you can't fireman carry somebody when you have a backpack on your back. So I think there's a big flaw in terms of that thinking that she was thrown over the shoulder because you got that backpack to contend with. So I think he would have loaded everything up, had the backpack on the shoulders, and then carried her out in that way I showed, in his arms like this, hands free, with her masked and her mouth taped. And this is another reason why I don't believe this is her coughing or sneezing on the ground. I just can't think of any case where a person was abducted and they didn't take those precautions if they were alive. Hi, Arizona gal. Thank you so much. Oh, I appreciate it. So nice of you. Thanks for the contribution and thanks for the kind words. You know, it's interesting because I had been doing about 2 shows a month, not because I didn't want to do more, but because between just difficult to slide in with the work schedule and family schedule and just the entirety. And then I realized, you know, mornings, that's, I'm up so early every morning. And I love that I see people from Australia and Europe and so on and so forth in this chat. And it was funny this morning, my husband said, wait a minute, it's Saturday. Why are you doing a show? And I said, I'm going to do one every morning. I love the morning crew. I love the people that are here and in chat. I love to read your comments. And I'd love to be really fresh and not have to worry about the, you know, News Nation and the other bookings that typically occur in the day and in the evening. So anyway, I love being with y'all and talking about these cases. I want to next talk a little bit about, and everybody's talking about this, so I just want to get it out here. Yes, it's true. She did not have any security system prior. For those of you who have elderly parents, it is impossible to convince elderly parents that are still of their right mind to do things like this. Oh, I've lived here 50 years. This is so safe. Nothing's ever happened in my neighborhood. There's no way anybody's going to care about an 84-year-old woman. There's no way I'm going to be a target. And you're just, and I don't know how to run it anyway. And I don't want anybody in my house to put it in. And I don't, I'm confused about the pad and what happens if it goes off. And then I don't know. And I don't want the police at my house. I can give you all those reasons just off the top of my head. And I truly believe from all we've heard, from what we've seen on the Today Show, listen, Nancy Guthrie was no pushover. And her kids, I'm sure, said, Mom, get a security system. And I'm sure she said, no, I don't want a security system for all those reasons I've named, because I'm naming the reasons that my stepmother and my biological mother, the mother who raised me, has passed. But they won't get a security system. Are you kidding me? They don't. No way. So nevertheless, even though I've seen a lot of online banter and people seemingly upset that she did not get a security system, it totally makes sense to me. And I'm sure many of you who have elderly parents might see that. Somebody wrote in there about that, why didn't she at least have one of those life tags? And I know exactly what you're meaning. So when they fall, it's called, I think, a life alert. I think there's many of them with different names. You know, and again, I just having my biological mom and her husband, I'm very close with, they don't want any of that. They are the most stubborn people. It's unbelievable. They still, you know, they're in their, let's see, 80 and 85. Mom, absolutely no health issues, although sometimes she thinks she has health issues. And then my father, her husband, who I love, Papa, I call him, he has a lot of health issues. He's fallen, very serious falls. The ambulance had to come. He's got a walker now, thank goodness, because for a long time he wouldn't walk with anything. Then he finally, we convinced him he needed a cane after one of his falls. And then after the last major fall, we fought, and he's 6'5". We finally convinced him he needed a walker. So I don't want to belabor this, other than I know a lot of people are sort of, I think, shaming Savannah, shaming the family. Why weren't you taking better care of her mom? We saw this happen also with Gene Hackman. When Gene Hackman, they ended up dying. A wife died of hantavirus from rats. I mean, that's from rat feces. And, I chose to post until the very end. I posted just the beautiful pictures of their mansion because it was unbelievable. And then by the end, I think I posted a couple of pictures, not the really bad ones, but certainly a couple pictures of how it had become just a hoarder house and a house that was filthy and unclean. And he was worth millions and millions of dollars. And it really made absolutely no sense as to how somebody with that kind of wealth didn't have a house cleaner and a caretaker. They had caretakers outside, to handle the lawn, but how nobody was caring for them. And Gene Hackman had pretty severe Alzheimer's situations. In fact, he lived there for a pretty long period of time after she was deceased from hantavirus. And a lot of people really questioned the family in that case. That was a little bit different because the family was very estranged and had really nothing much to do at all with Gene Hackman and his wife, his second wife. So I think there were a lot of family dynamics as to why they weren't more closely being taken care of. But in this case, this is just the opposite. You had Annie that lived, I think, maybe 10 minutes away. You had Savannah. You can clearly see their close relationship. Although Cameron is very quiet and does not like to be in the limelight and likes to lead a very private life, I have no doubt that he was also close to her. We've heard no indication otherwise. So I just wanted to comment about that because I know a lot of this is swirling. And even though logically to all of us, it just makes no sense having elderly folks, it makes all the sense in the world that no matter what, they are free to make their own decisions. They're adults. And as long as they're in their right mind, they're allowed to make all these decisions. But certainly now there is security there. All right. And I love that. So Dixie Doodle says, sending all my love or love to all the caregivers, because that is so true that there's so many people that force their parents almost to move in with them and that visit. And in fact, I know somebody that I'm very close to on the platforms that's part of our team that every day cares for her mother, that's what she does full time, is a full time caregiver now. And then I actually, Kevin Linehan, he moved back in with his parents to care for them. And then sadly, and this is another creator, it's Yellow Cottage Tales. He's mostly a writer, but he also has a show. And we work very closely on the Karen Reed case. He was on Court TV a lot. Kevin Linehan moved in with his parents because they took ill. He needed to care for them. And then sadly, he was diagnosed with cancer and has been in and out of treatment and hospitals. And, I think the world of Kevin. He's a great guy. And I have every hope that he's going to survive, but it's been very, very difficult for those of you who follow his channel, Yellowtails. I strongly recommend it if you're looking at, he likes to look into all different things. He likes to look into sort of unsolved crimes. He's mostly a writer, and he's really an expert on the Karen Reed case. If any of you are still following or interested in that case, and the fact that the witnesses are now being Karen Reed and her attorneys are going after the witnesses as being responsible. The witnesses who loved and grew up with, in some cases, went to prom with. I say prom, it might have been homecoming, whatever, dance, I mean, dated, and loved John. They are now pointing the finger at them as killing him, and it's a horrible, horrible situation. But anyway, if you want any, if you're following that case or interested in that case, I highly recommend Kevin Linehan. He's at Yellow Cottage Tales or Duvois Yellow Cottage Tales. All right, I want him to move down to this. Because I had a lot of people asking about this. Jen, what's going on outside of the house? And, you know, the good news is you still have the local channels there. It's very difficult since you can't park there. I talked about this yesterday. I couldn't believe all the equipment that the cameramen and that these crews carry, microphones and different cameras for different things and different mics for different things and backdrops and tents and things to protect yourself from the sun and rain. It does rain there. It did rain there fairly recently during coverage. So, and they can't because they can't bring a car in. Of course, that's very purposeful. They're trying to cut down the traffic, I think, because the Guthries are trying to take back control of their house. We've seen locks changed. We've seen the security system put in. We've seen the no trespassing signs put up. We've seen the visit, and I truly think that perhaps the family was part of that visit along with the assistant United States attorneys that were on that visit, because when you're going to do an entourage like that and you're going to take FBI agents away from their work, especially likely the lead, what we call case agents, there's only one case agent that's over this. That's how we do it. You got one ball that stops with him. So the final decisions, other than obviously his supervisor can step in and override a decision, and certainly the assistant special agent in charge, the special agent in charge can even do that. That's typically not what happens. I've literally almost never seen that. You might see them make a suggestion, but you can imagine in a paramilitary situation, if you're not, if you don't trust your chief in command, meaning the case agent who's really in charge, then there's an issue. So there's a reason that that case agent was appointed in the first place. And that's because the supervisor and executive management trusted him or her wholeheartedly with the decision-making in this case. So anyway, really quickly wanted to discuss this. You know, this to me, I don't know how you stop this, but this woman thought it would be really cool, I guess, to have Nancy Guthrie's house behind her photo shoot. I guess she doesn't think that her photos are doing well enough with just her. I say, why don't you go to a cool building or to a beautiful scene or in front of an amazing sunset? Why in the world would you go to a house where Nancy Guthrie, this victim, this senior victim has been abducted and then worse, possibly could have died? Why would you think that that makes a cool picture? I guess because she thinks people will actually go on and look at it. And that's a sad state of affairs. If you're not beautiful enough, sexy enough, intriguing enough to not have to take a picture in front of a potential murder house and what we know is for sure an abduction house, maybe you need to look at getting another job. So I was pretty sickened by that. I just had to bring that up. Also, we know about I touched on this yesterday, but I know a lot of people couldn't hear. I touched on the fact that there was a DUI driver driving back and forth, so on. He ended up being arrested for DUI. So that's all that was, not to make more out of it than it was. But in case you weren't on the show yesterday, or in case you could not hear a word I was saying, which could be because I was in that airport, but just didn't want to miss giving the update, because there was another update we're going on to. That was the whole situation that was transacted outside of the house, where you saw police and then you actually see the sobriety test being given and so forth. So, you know, unfortunately, this is going to continue to happen. I fully expect all sorts of individuals who shouldn't be there being out there. I also want to give credit here. This picture, I believe, is from JLR Investigates. He's a YouTuber who goes to many scenes. He was actually at the Karen Reed scene at trial, which he cracked me up. And then he's been at many other scenes. He's kind of a boots on the ground, which I like, because you really do get a lens into what's happening there. So nevertheless, I want to give him credit where credit is due. And this is his photo, I believe. I believe it's his photo. If it isn't, then I will just say, JLR, I just gave you credit for something you didn't do, but I really do believe this is his photo. Let me get her back up on the stage, because that's what the show is all about. I want to talk about this photo next. We've talked a lot about this. This, again, is from this video that was about 2.5 miles away. Again, I always like to give credit when I know where the videos are from. This originated from Fox Digital. Of course, right when that video came out, I posted it right away and said, wow, this could be an important lead. I said that because if you look at the timestamp down below, it says 2:36 a.m. Mountain Standard Time on the date of the abduction. Now, remember, she disconnected from her Apple Watch at 2:28, I believe it was, 2:28 a.m. If anybody knows anything different in chat, let me know. But that's my memory. I don't have my note right here on that. Oh, actually, I may have my note. Let me just double check. I do not have that note. But I believe it was 2:28. Hey, Daddy-O, can you let the dog back in? Thanks. So anyway, I wanted to just touch on this because that would be pretty tight. That's just the disconnection, which can be about 6 to 12 inches from the Apple Watch, you know, up to several feet. But there still is a lot to take place. Did they leave right at that moment, a couple of minutes, get out the door, get her in the trunk, take off? It's tight, but it's possible. From the beginning, I said, and welcome. Thank you so much, Jamato 13. Thank you so much. I said from the very beginning is that traffic going by at this time of night would be unusual, but there are shift workers. There are people who are up at this time of night. I'm up often at this time of night. And so it's possible this could be completely unrelated. Then shortly after, within probably 5 or 6 hours, because there is, I believe, in another frame, some other frames, because they had more than one camera, I believe the possible make and model of this vehicle can be made out, and then even a partial license plate. Nevertheless, I believe the Bureau, we know they went to the place of this house and retrieved the footage. And I believe they jumped on it. When I say jumped on it, did everything they could to get that plate and to identify that vehicle. And they were on it. And people said, oh, you couldn't do that within 5 or 6 hours. Oh, you can. Yes, Brian Koberger's situation took longer. But in this situation, much more desolate. And also this particular time of night, the camera angles, all the other cameras that would have been involved. And the fact that you have, on this case, even more agents than the other case, almost double, 100 FBI agents was reported being assigned. And then behind them, and I always have said this, for every FBI agent, you have multiple people that are behind them. We call them support staff. And I kind of hated that word, support staff. But you have a secretary as an agent to assist. You have IAs, which are... and rotors, they don't call them rotors anymore. They're basically like file clips. So you need something, you can get a file pulled right away. Now everything is so automated, except for in certain parts of our filing system. And even then they were working on getting everything automated, that literally you can just sit there and pull up almost any and every file you need for quick reference. But you have staff to be able to help you with that. In addition, you have a whole analytical staff that is available. And I guarantee you, and just to let you know, it's like a 1-to-3 ratio, 30 some odd thousand support. And then, you know, agent staff is 10,000, maybe up to 13,000 at any one time. But depending on hiring, you know, there's been a lot of firings. And there's been a lot of hirings, right? They've waived some of the requirements. So I don't know exactly how many agents, but I believe somewhere between 10 and 15,000. You have triple that amount, or not triple, double that amount for your support staff. So it's big. And behind there, those analysts, they get a lead like this, they are on it. All the registered, whatever this ends up being. I've seen, you know, somebody say it, this was a law enforcement person that Fox had on, say this was a Kia, I believe. And then I saw other reports. No, this is a Range Rover. I'm not going to go into that much detail because I'm not even sure that this is connected. It could be. Early on, just so you know, there was reporting from TMZ and others that per their sources, and that's why whenever you see me say source, that means I'm giving you this information and making it very clear it was a source. Because to me, if I can't see it with my eyes, which I can see this with my eyes and I can see the timing and I can see it's possible, it's tight, but I think it's possible that, in other words, a car from Nancy Guthrie's could end up here at this time. It's possible. But it's a lead. I thought it was a very important lead. But very early on, source reporting said, no, they already cleared this car. I think that was something like 5 or 6 hours in. And I know it's possible for all the analysts on this and everything to possibly clear this car. For instance, if they got the tag and figured out what car it was, and it's a neighbor living 5 houses down or around the corner, and then you interview them and they say, oh yeah, I get off work at, you know, whatever establishment at this time, and that was me going by. That's how quickly that can be done. However, now I just saw a report and I posted it on X from a local reporter that said, listen, it's not a dead end yet, that his source says it may not be a dead end. So this is the bottom line. When you see if I post it on X or if I talk about it here and I caveat it with source, that means take it for what it's worth. A source said this isn't involved, and a source said this might not be a dead end. I really detest source reporting. I detest it. I know there's some good ones out there, but they're not vetted like our sources in the FBI. And so source has a whole new meaning. And then I also told you, I have never understood why anyone worth their salt in law enforcement, and certainly behind the curtain in the FBI. And I tell you, I really hope in these cases that if it's even true, which I don't even know if I believe it, I think sometimes this is what I think why source reporting ends up being bad. It's not because of the reporters. The reporters are reporting what they're being told. This is why I think it is. You have reporter here and you have source here that is telling reporter something. And source is saying that they know about this from somebody else that is close to the investigation. And then that person that they said that they got it from maybe said something to that source, maybe, maybe not, from another person that they say was close. We literally don't know from the source that is giving the information to the reporter, even a well-placed source, how close they really are to the case. And I could tell you, if there's any FBI agent support staff, secretary, giving out information, they're going to be fired. I mean, they're putting their job in jeopardy. I think they would be fired. You just don't do it. Having said that, I am at a loss at to why, at least the Pima County Sheriff's Office, the PIO, who is now big involved, doesn't just come out and say that car had nothing to do with it. Because now you have sleuths and online detectives and people in the neighborhood, everybody worried, was this car part of it? Was it or wasn't it? So just come out and say, it's very simple. The vehicle that was seen 2.5 miles away that recently was reported by Fox, we've done our investigation and we've determined it's not involved. Instead, you have sources, and I truly believe how that works. I think it's very seldom you have a literal FBI agent that is working their tail off conducting this case is going to be leaking information. I just doubt that that happens. I think it's several steps removed from when the reporter gets the information. That's what I think. All right. Let me see. Google Trends supports idea she was targeted because she's older and living alone. You know, I think one of my very first tweets on this, I talked about Google Trends. I always use Google Trends. I use it in the Idaho 4 case. We did several shows on it. I know I did a huge one with Cuomo. We spent a long time explaining the charts, getting them all up there. For people to understand, if you see 100 as an example on a Google Trend, sometimes you'll see the number 100 or another number. That doesn't mean 100 hits. It means that was at the peak of people looking at them. So in other words, that was at the highest amount of people looking. And it's interesting because you should Google Trend yourself. For instance, if I Google Trend me, I'm a flat line. Nobody is looking at Jennifer Coffendaffer to any sort of degree. And that's how it's going to be for almost everyone in this country. But then as obviously when you see something like this happen, so from the first on, you're going to see all this trending on Google on different searches for Nancy Guthrie and Savannah Guthrie and Annie Guthrie and Tommaso Siena and all of that. You're going to see that. But it's prior to that. And that's why in that case, also the Tepe case, I thought it was very important. You know, I was able to show, I think it was on, again, going from memory, so don't hold me to this if I'm a little off. I think it was December 5th, we saw a huge Google trend. And that date ended up coinciding, as I recall, with when he was out there conducting surveillance or right in that window when Michael McKee, who was the ex-husband who is charged with killing the Tepes, was out there. So Google Trends gives a lot of clues. Now, I did a lot of research on the trending, and I didn't find Nancy Guthrie trended. As I recall, the address, there was some trending with that address. I need to go back and look and maybe do a show on the Google Trends I see, because I think that I saw it got kind of blown out of what really the trend meant relevant to the data. And then also that it was so much earlier. But nevertheless, anytime you see a trend on a house or a person that ends up being abducted, it's relevant. I'm going to do a separate show on that. I think I'm going to do a completely separate show on that. Because I think it's the other thing is some people just will run to that date and they don't look at other dates. You need to see as an example, was that a date when she was on the Today Show? And so now everybody's going, oh, I wonder what happened on the Today Show, or oh, Nancy's, or you know, Nancy Guthrie. I want to see. And thank you, Sarah, for pointing that out. I'm going to do a show on this because it takes really looking at your data points, which I love you did, and then comparing it to what Nancy was doing. Was she on the Today Show? That would be the number one thing I would look at. If she was on the Today Show in and around that time, it's probably everybody going, oh, how cool. Savannah Guthrie's mom. I want to know more about her. And then you see it. And again, it's not the number. It's the it's sort of a percentage, if you will, of during that time frame compared to all the other times she's been Googled, is there a peak? I hope that makes sense. So in other words, if I'm flatlined the whole way, and then something happens, just say, I don't know, something happens to the person. So they're flatlined and then something happens. Maybe they get an award for something and they're recognized for something. And then some people Google that. And maybe they only get, you know, 40 Google searches or 50 Google searches, but they've never had any. That's going to peak, showing that's the peak of their times they've ever been Google searched. So I always caveat it with, for me, the reason Google Trends really mattered and Brian Koberger was because Brian Koberger, I believe, was Googling himself, because this was before anybody ever knew the name Brian Koberger. That's when he was trending. I think he was on there constantly. Where's the news? Where's the news? Is there any news about me? Is there any news about, you know, what's going on? Because I think he was always paranoid. Are people looking at me? And again, it was before anybody knew the name Brian Koberger. So that's why I felt that was important. And then on the Tepe, again, it was because it was very close to the time of the murders, and there were two different times. And I found that very significant. And then, of course, one ended up being very significant because that was when he was doing all his reconnaissance. So anyway, I thank you for that, though, because I do believe Google Trends can be important. Let's see. So the bottom line is with this, because everything we're hearing is from source information, we really don't know whether this is in or out. It kind of depends on what source you want to believe. So, and quite frankly, I'm hesitant about any of them. As far as Nancy Guthrie, again, I'm going to do a special show just about her and what might have made her a target. I've talked a little bit about Savannah, and I talked with Savannah with Mac, Cheryl McCollum, Zone 7. Swans Don't Swim in the Sewer is her new book. 40-year, I believe, vet in law enforcement, particularly her area of expertise are crime scenes. So I love having her on the show and appreciate her insights. But anyway, so we've touched on Savannah, and maybe it was a person obsessed with Savannah, but I really want to shift and talk about Nancy. What would have made Nancy a target? Because I've found a lot, quite frankly. Nancy was not a wallflower. She was not somebody who just didn't have a mind of her own. She was somebody who posted on social media. She had very strong political views. And, you know, I could think of a lot of instances where strong political views, whether it's strong left or strong right, whether you're at polar opposites, people have been targeted for strong left and targeted for strong right. Let me give a couple examples right off the bat. Charlie Kirk was targeted by, I believe, by a radical leftist lunatic seeker of attention and notoriety, killed Charlie Kirk, who was a right-leaning figure, public figure. And then let's take Nancy Pelosi's husband and that whole situation. So that was somebody who was very left-leaning who was then targeted. So, and there's many others. I'm trying to do this whole workup on this, but I'm trying to do it carefully. I don't believe true crime should ever become political. That is my standpoint. I try to be very apolitical. I obviously have very right-leaning views when it comes to crime. I think we should be harsh on crime. I think criminals who commit violent crime shouldn't be let out. I think we need to spend way more money on prison systems and rehabilitation systems. I think we need special prisons for people who are just in there for drug crimes. In other words, they stole, but they were a drug addict, and that's why they they did it, you know, serious use people who with serious addiction issues. I think there should be a whole nother setup for them outside of where you put violent criminals, because sometimes they can get really huge sentences. I mean, I don't want to get off on a tangent on prison reform and everything, but the bottom line is I think they should be locked up and away from society. And loons should also be people with serious mental illness that are such a danger that, like in the Nick Reiner case, he's willing to kill his parents, which again, we talk about whether he is mentally ill or not. All I know is he was a severe addict and he faked. And I have that audio. It's great. I can't get it to upload on Twitter. I've tried a million times, but it's great. He talks about how, to get drugs at the facilities he was at when they would cut him off because he wanted to be high all the time. He would fake being crazy. Like one time he took a bunch of things and just started throwing things and destroyed his television and just went crazy. And then he laughs about it and says, it was great because then I got my drugs. I acted crazy. So I think he's definitely a faker. Did he always have problems when he was young? I mean, he's always been a problem, but he's been associating with drugs for years since his very, very young. Was it to self-medicate other issues he had going on? It might, but it is crystal clear to me this guy knew wrong, right from wrong. He knew right from wrong. So when you know right from wrong, that means you're not crazy enough to understand that you just slaughtered your parents. That's another case. It's really one of the cases I'm going to be all over when that gets ready for trial. Alan Jackson had that case for just a quick minute because then I think the money ran out. I think that the siblings and such, they weren't going to free up all that money, millions that it would have costed to retain Alan Jackson. So Alan made a quick entrance in and a quick exit out. And I believe and will always believe it was all about money. And then who went in is the public defender. And quite frankly, in working with public defenders my entire career, working with them now in my current employment, they are really good. They care so much. Typically, public defenders don't get paid very much, and they are in it because they really care about justice for that victim. And let's just throw it out there. If I were, something happened and I needed representation, I would never in a million years pick somebody like Alan Jackson. Never in a million years. Who I would pick would be a public defender that was one of the heads. I mean, if I could pick somebody. So just say I was in an altercation, I'm driving down the road and somebody draws their gun or somebody swerves into me to try to hurt me and I draw my gun, I shoot them. I'm obviously going to, face possible scrutiny. Whether I was justified or not. And just say, I was indicted for that and it went to a grand jury. I was indicted and I needed representation. These public defenders are great. So I expect very good representation for Nick Reiner. I think he'll have the whole breadth of the public defender's office behind him. And in other words, everything they need. He'll have numerous co-counsels. All those public defenders can assist the public defender that has been assigned to the case. And he's going to have great representation, I think, far better than Alan Jackson. I'm not sure what this says, Sarah. I'm not sure someone searched mask with three holes. I'm not sure that message, but if you want to resend it or put it up here, and I'm happy to put that back up. I wanted to talk really quickly about not only Nancy Guthrie being a possible target. I'm also going to do a special show about Savannah Guthrie, and I'm going to break that down a little bit more than I have. I've kind of broken it down already, but I need to add more to it. I also wanted to say another new indication that the FBI is really heading this situation and that the reins are changed. I'm going to just point them out for you. Number one, that the assistant United States attorneys, they don't work with the locals. They are strictly there for federal prosecution, and they work hand in hand with federal agents. That is a big clue to me that this has possibly been handed over. Second of all, you see that the sheriff is really not responding anymore. His PIO, that's the public information officer, is now actually heading the messaging from Pima County. So I see a real backseat taken from the sheriff in all the latest news. Also, and I'm not sure I put it up here yesterday. I'm not sure I have it up here today. Oh, I might. Do I have it right here? Nope. Sorry. Let me get rid of her. I don't have it here. But essentially, they sent out a statement, the Pima County Prosecution Office, and said, listen, any media inquiries, don't send it to, well, they didn't say don't send it. They said, do send it to the FBI. That was very telling to me that the FBI is taking more of the lead. The other thing is operations has moved from Tucson to Phoenix. Now, let me explain this really quick, because for those of you who might not understand how the FBI is divided up, the FBI has field offices in all the major cities, in all the big major cities. Those we call field offices. So obviously LA and Houston and New York and, or I'm sorry, New York City, I should say, and all the cities, Kansas City, those are our main, what we call field offices. So in Arizona, as an example, that's a state that only has one field office, and it's in Phoenix. And that field office then has what we call RAs. Those are called resident agencies. And those resident agencies are different places. Like there's one in Flagstaff. Tucson, actually, I need to double check. I actually need to double check if they have a field office, an actual field office in Tucson, or if it is just an RA. I'm going to double check that. They might have two in Arizona, and it can fluctuate so depending on, you know, the needs of the Bureau, and certainly under Patel and under other directors too. Let me check on that to make sure Tucson was it. But the main field office, I can tell you, the biggest field office in Arizona is Phoenix. And then, like I said, there's RAs outside of there. So as an example, if you're an agent that is in the main field office like Phoenix, and again, I'm going to double check Tucson, but if you are in a main office, you are assigned to a squad. So you're either on a white collar squad or a domestic terrorism squad or a counterterrorism squad or a violent crime squad or an organized crime squad or a drug squad. So you have a specialty, and that's, those are the only violations you deal with. And it's great because when you have that, you have agents that become very proficient with those types of crimes, because that is what they do day in and day out, and they become very good at it. And some people, their whole career, only investigate a certain type of crime. For me, when I was in the Houston, so I was in two main offices there's a lot of main field offices in Texas because Texas is huge. There's Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, El Paso. I believe four. Austin is not one. Main, huge, what we call field offices. And then outside of those offices, they have those satellite offices I'm discussing called RAs. So when you are in an RA, like the Flagstaff RA, assuming it still exists, and I know it did because one of my dearest friends was assigned to Flagstaff, which was a great assignment. You handle everything that occurs in your jurisdiction. A lot of people say, as an example, FBI doesn't investigate homicides. How do FBI agents know about homicides? Well, people who say that are just not educated, because any homicide, obviously, that happens on a boat, a train, or a plane is FBI jurisdiction. And also on a government facility or on federal land. All of that. That's why Gabby Petito, her murder was handled by the FBI, because that particular land where she was murdered in the Grand Tetons was federal, and that put it right into the venue of the FBI. That is not to say that a Chicago or New York or LA homicide detective isn't going to have so many more, much more experience in homicides than any FBI agent, 100%. But also those agents that have those RAs, they work hand in hand with the locals. And I know for me, I was in an RA for, I was in the Bureau 25 years. And of those years, 15 of those, I was in an RA. And that's where you handle every crime there is that can be federally investigated or that you have. And especially for me, I was assigned with different local officers. Like I was on the gang unit for 6 years. My office was at the gang unit. And so obviously any gang-related murder, any gang-related violent crime, you're right on that and in the thick of it to see if there is a federal nexus. So that is why, in part, I believe that certainly the FBI should have taken jurisdiction in this situation because Pima County had so few of these types of situations. And in fact, kidnapping, by the way, when I looked at, and I put this up on another live, Pima County did not even have a category for kidnappings because they don't have kidnappings. Not even a category. In other words, a statistical evaluator, a statistical column. And that is why from the beginning, it really did make a lot of sense for the Bureau to handle this. And as I pointed out, under federal law, when somebody has been abducted after 24 hours, if they have not been found under subsection B of the kidnapping, federal kidnapping statute, they are indeed considered to have crossed state lines, or in this case, I would believe international lines. It's not that they did, it's that that is a presumption by law. And that's why the FBI and the United States Attorney's Office can get their foot in the door. Burning question for me is, do they have proof now? Do they have proof that she crossed state lines or crossed into Mexico? Or that somebody from Mexico came? Do they have proof of that? Or are they just using that subsection B of the statute to establish venue? That's the burning question for me at this point. We don't know, but I see a total and absolute shift over to the federal authorities. Does that mean that the FBI just takes over and it's like in Die Hard? You know, I'm Special Agent Johnson. I'm Special Agent Johnson. Goodbye. We got this. That is not how it works. The FBI and local partners want to partnership. They all have something very important to add. Those locals know this area, know the criminal element better than anyone because they have worked there, some of them, for decades. Many of them have been born and raised there. So to not involve local authorities in any type of big case like this would be absolutely stupid. And the FBI totally understands that. And then they totally understand, too, that this is not going to be the last case that's an important case that they need to have their local partners on. So there is no way Pima County is going to be pushed out, and there is no way any other authorities are going to be pushed out. The FBI wants to work hand in hand. And I think really what we're talking about is a paradigm change in terms of who is overall in charge of the investigation and overall who will be in charge of the adjudication, which is the proceedings once a person is arrested. Could that switch back? Obviously, it very much could. If it ends up that the abductors live 2.5 miles away, never crossed state lines with her, you know, it was all right there, you're definitely going to see the state. But if like that other case I was telling you about, that other 80-year-old from South Carolina, where that yahoo abducted her, hung around in her house for an hour, ate pizza, left his DNA all over the place, then got in a vehicle with her, stole her vehicle, drove all around South Carolina, then went over to North Carolina, which was a real idiot move, then went back to South Carolina and shot her in the back of the head. That in that case that we've talked about, in that case, that was all charged federally with, again, the partnership of the locals. So we'll have to see how this turns out, but I have found this paradigm shift very, very, very interesting, because initially the Bureau was there at the invitation of the Pima County Sheriff and his extension and ask for help after those ransom notes came in. And specifically saying in that press conference, if it has to do with the ransom notes they're handling, but intimating that they are handling the actual abduction. And I see a paradigm shift here for all those reasons I just named. Let's see. Joe Rogan overdosed last night? Gosh, I'll have to look into that. All right, let me make sure I am not missing anything. I do want to recap this because I think this is important. Source reporting has said this is not important. They've already dead-ended this, according to the FBI. And that was a quote, like an FBI source. Another source I saw from a local reporter said it's not at a dead end. So at this point, we don't know. And Pima County has said, I think I forgot to tell you what Pima County said. Pima County said, and I may read it to quote them exactly. And this, again, is the PIO. The sheriff is not making many quotes anymore. Exactly what was said from Pima County. Actively reviewing surveillance video of vehicles traveling in the Catalina Foothills area, including areas farther from the Guthrie residence. Homeowners in the surrounding communities are encouraged to submit any relevant footage. All right. There you have it. All right, everyone. I'm going to let you go. I've talked way too long. We talked about a lot of different things. I thank you so much for being here. Until next time, everyone, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all the missing.